You're listening to Game Play with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Game Play. I am your host, Matthew Cause. Joining me now, someone who I get along with really well, someone I really respect. I've broken bread with this man before. He's a wonderful guy. But right now, Mark Sacchino, host and producer of Golf Talk Canada, and you can listen to it on Mondays here on TSN 1050. All right, now, I can't stand this man. In fact, I'm tired of him. I'm thinking of muting and blocking his stupid Twitter account because the man's in Hawaii. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Matt, I'm not making a lot of friends back home this week. I know. This is a rough work assignment this week, right, in Maui. So it's going to be 80 degrees Fahrenheit and sunny again today, and that is the forecast for the rest of the way here at the Century Tournament of Champions. So, I mean, like, Maui's pretty perfect most of the time, but we've got a really good stretch here for golf. It's pretty awesome.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's. I didn't need any of that. Like, literally, I didn't. Okay, follow-up question of this. We'll get to golf. How much does hockey media hate golf media? Like, you have to travel to Detroit and then Pittsburgh and then Minnesota, and there are flights canceled because, you know, it's winter, and you're going from Hawaii to somewhere else in Hawaii, to California, and wherever golf events can be played. How much do the hockey media hate golf media?
Well, totally. You know, it's so funny you bring this up because, you know, we're all staying at the media hotel this week, and one of the top dogs at PGA Tour Entertainment, we were sitting by the pool, and I was just chatting with him, and he's like, you know, I used to do a Bruins hockey back in the day. And I got to tell you, those Boston-Edmonton flights in January were a lot different than these Maui flights for the PGA Tour. So you're right. I'm sure a lot of our hockey guys are looking at these assignments saying, I picked the wrong sport. But, hey, listen, I'm doing my job, Matt, head down, not enjoying any of this, just efforting here in Hawaii. That's all I'm doing.
You're a hell of a hero there, Mark. All right, so let's get to it. The Century Championship going in Hawaii. I see Rahm is involved. Just who are the names? I think Justin Thomas, John Rahm, they've opened the tournament as co-favorites at plus 800. What do people need to know who are tuning in? Because sometimes it's like you wake up and you forget that golf is back. You turn on the TV and you're like, oh, my God, I know that guy, and he's got a 5-iron. Like, what should people know about this event?
Well, it's a very different event to start the year, the first two events of the year. This is a winners-only event here in Hawaii, so it's a star-studded field. So to get into this event, you've got to be somebody already. Rahm, as you mentioned, one of the favorites. He started yesterday at 7-under par. He's only one off the lead. Cameron Smith's got the lead at 8-under par. And the logjam, Berger, Rahm, and Patrick Cantlay, of course, FedEx Cup champion, PGA Tour Player of the Year, Patrick Cantlay, also at 7-under par. So lots of big names playing well on the first day. Koepka at 5-under, Morikawa at 5-under. I guess the big surprise is that Justin Thomas, who was one of the co-favorites, as you mentioned, this guy has 2 wins and 2 third-place finishes in the last 4 years, or excuse me, the last 5 years at this golf tournament. He loves this golf course. He shot 1-over par yesterday, which is a bit of a shock. So, but other than Justin Thomas, a lot of the names that were supposed to do something are doing it. I guess the big two, Rahm and Cantlay.
Let's get the COVID question out of the way. I'm wondering if the PGA has talked about it or any concerns they have. Obviously, very different sport, different set of parameters than what we're dealing with in the NHL, NBA, and in the NFL, where the Super Bowl might get moved. But I'm just wondering if the PGA has brought it up at all.
There's been, like, no talk, zero talk. I think there's a couple things going on, to be honest with you. A, it's an outdoor sport.
Yeah.
B, golf was the first sport to come back originally when I think the rest of the world, in fact, there was a lot of naysayers saying that the PGA Tour was being irresponsible when they returned as early as they did in June of 2020, late May of 2020. There was a lot of people calling them out, and they were saying, no, we can lead out of this and show you guys how to do this safely in an outdoor environment. So they've got a lot of, I guess, you know, history and information they've gathered under their belt on how to deal with this so long, you know, pre-vaccine, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the other part of this, and as Canadians, sometimes maybe we don't recognize, or I don't as often as I should, but the states themselves govern themselves so differently amongst each other as we do in Canada as provinces. Yeah, there's slight differences province to province, but overall there's a much more Canadian way of dealing with this. Where in the U.S., you know, you could have theoretically, you could have 50 very different ways of dealing with COVID depending on what state you're in. So where the tour is that week, it can look like a very different tournament than the week before. But right now they're not talking about it. But I don't see this going backwards much in America. The one that concerns me, Matt, I know I hate to talk like this in January.
We should be speaking more
optimism. Could we go 3 years without a Canadian Open?
Of course we can. I mean, they're talking about not having the outdoor games at Tim Hortons. Anyway, no, we're not getting to that. But, okay, I just wanted to ask you real quick. I just wanted to ask you the COVID question. We're going to move on. At the end of the year, I did my predictions for 2022. By the way, we're joined again by Mark Sacchino, host and producer of Golf Talk Canada. And I said that one of my predictions, Jordan Spieth, is going to win the Open Championship. He won in the Royal Birkdale in 2017, ninth in 2018, second in 2021, fourth in 2015. If there's a golf tournament with or a major with no water, brown grass, and a lot of wind and umbrellas that don't work, that's where Spieth is going to do well. Your thoughts on my prediction? I was going to do a couple with you. Jordan Spieth wins the Open Championship.
I think that's not a bad prediction. He putts any type of putting surface well. Sometimes the greens at St. Andrews can be a little slow, a little bumpy. He's proven he can putt those greens well. Not everybody can. His Achilles heel has always been, several last few years, is just he needs wiggle room off the tee. It's a wide golf course off the tee. Plenty forgiveness there, especially if we get some decent weather, which, as you know, at St. Andrews, when they get decent weather, they tear it up. But if they get bad weather and the Open raises its ugly head, you can certainly get some different scores. But I like the wiggle room off the tee there for Jordan. And finally, he's contended at St. Andrews before. He almost won the Open Championship there a few years back, so it's not like he doesn't know how to have success around that golf course. So I'm on board with that prediction. I'm not saying, you know, he's my guy, he's going to get it, but I would certainly be suggesting that that's not a bad call and might be worth a good look.
I'm seeing, and I was just looking at some of the odds here. I see John Rahm, 10-1 to win the Masters, Brooks Koepka, 20-1 to win the Masters or the PGA Championship. I throw those three future bets at you. Is there any that Mark Sacchino bites on?
One of my predictions at the end of the year, and I'm sticking with it, is that Colin Morikawa is going to win the green jacket. So he's still my guy at the Masters. In the last 20 years, statistically speaking, it's the best iron player that wins at Augusta. We have this theory about great putters. You got to be a great putter. You got to be a bomber. Yeah, bombers and great putters have won. But historically, in the last two decades, it's the guy leading in strokes gained approach, the best iron player in the field, best iron player in the world that week that gets it done at Augusta. There's not a better iron player on the planet than Colin Morikawa. He putted with a blindfold last year at Augusta and still kind of contended through the weekend. If he makes any putts at all, he's going to win the green jacket. I still got Morikawa for the Masters. But Rahm is a good pick on any golf course at any time. And his ball striking, for a guy that took a lot of time off, he is striping it already this week. I think, you know, he's a good bet on any tour at any time right now. He's that good, but so is Morikawa. Koepka's going to be an interesting one to see. A lot of question marks. I don't know. He's talking like he's expecting himself to have a big year. I'm still a wait-and-see approach on Koepka. I want to see what he does in the first couple months of the year.
Yep, and just see how his health is. By the way, Morikawa is tied for eighth at the Century Tournament of Champions at 5-under. More likely to happen, Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka become BFFs, or Bryson wins a Grand Slam event this year?
I guess we got to go. Well, I think they played us that, Bryson and Brooks, I think they played us for that made-for-TV scam in Vegas. I mean, I don't even know how much of that was real or not. So, you know, I'll go with Bryson. I think Bryson is one of those guys that sometimes he's going to look like you're scratching your head, like, what's going on here? Like the back nine on Sunday at Torrey Pines last year at the U.S. Open. He had one hand on that U.S. Open trophy that John Rahm ended up winning and imploded. He shot 43 on the back nine coming home at Torrey Pines. So, but there are those days where he puts, or those weeks where he puts 4 days together. And with that type of distance and that kind of explosiveness, I think, you know, he's probably due to win a major again. Yesterday on the 18th hole, I was calling him coming home, his last hole. It's just a monster par five. He hit his drive is somewhere in the neighborhood of 380 yards, and the ball speed was 199 miles per hour. So he's approaching, you know, over 200 miles an hour ball speed, which is unheard of in actual competitive play. You see stuff like that at long drive competitions where the guys can hit it, you know, in a field that's like, you know, two football fields wide and they're not playing golf. To see a guy like get to those levels and creep up to those numbers in a PGA Tour event, it's like, it's just scary. It's unheard of. So I think Bryson will go with that one.
Joined by Mark Sacchino again. You can hear him this Monday, Golf Talk Canada on TSN 1050. What are your expectations for Brooke Henderson this year?
Yeah, I'm hoping Brooke has a big year. We had this debate, Bob, Adam, and I. We kind of called it. It wasn't a year she took a step forward. And it wasn't a year she went back. You know, she did win. You know, historically speaking, what she's done at such a young age is incredible, and we got to keep it in perspective. But it was another year where she didn't contend in a major. It was a year where she got one win, not two wins. So, you know, you can't call a winner a step back, but not contending in majors, I don't think, is a big step forward. So this year, I think, got to be a bit of a, I don't want, you know, bounce back year, for lack of a better term. The concern, and we'll know it early, is, Matt, this year they limited the length of drivers on professional tours. It used to be a limit of 48 inches. They went back to 46 inches. Brooke Henderson, her entire career, has played with a 48-inch driver that she choked down on 2 inches. And she has been practicing with a 46-inch driver and is saying it feels very different for her. Because if she chokes down on a 46, she's going to be technically turning it into a 44. And if she doesn't choke down on it, it's a completely different feel for her. So she's going to have to adapt to this, and it might take some time. So, again, all eyes on Brooke early in the LPGA Tour season to see what she comes up with from an equipment standpoint.
And last question with Mark Sacchino, and if I don't ask you this, our boss, Jeff McDonald, will have me fired and you reprimanded. Late this PGA season, near the end of this upcoming PGA season, the odds that Tiger Woods is teeing off on a Saturday?
I'm going to say 95%.
Oh, nice. Okay. We'll leave it.
See him. Matt, no, I'm thinking we're going to see him. Right. Play golf at the Players' Championship in March. Jeff thinks I'm a little aggressive. He thinks it's going to be later on in the year.
Bob Weeks thinks you're aggressive. No way Bob Weeks agrees with you. No way.
Nope. They all think I'm a little early, but the Wednesday night of the Players' Championship, Tiger Woods goes into the World Golf Hall of Fame on that Wednesday night. It is one of the flattest golf courses on the PGA Tour, and by modern-day standards, it's a short golf course. I am hopeful and still have a holding on to the possibility that he plays the Players' Championship.
All right. Love it. Thank you so much. Thank you. That's great. I hope you're right. Bob Weeks, what does he know about golf? Come on. You know, I hope. You are right, my friend.
Have a great day, man. Great chat with you.
Yeah. You as well. Enjoy Hawaii.
Thanks, Matt. I'll do my best. I'll have a nice crisp Chardonnay for you.
Get out of here. Enjoy your Chablis. Get out of here. That is Mark Sacchino from Golf Talk Canada. Again, you can hear it on TSN 1050 at 10 a.m. on Monday. All right, on the other side, I'm going to win you some money, give you some player prop bets for the final week of the NFL season. That's coming up next right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. And I often like to zig and zag when it comes to a similar topic, because you never want to get nailed down and become predictable. And I'll give you an example. Every now and then, I host, I'll fill in on shows on News Talk 1010. I love doing it. And I remember one day, within a 15-minute period, someone accused me of being some loopy, ultra-left-wing, liberal, bleeding heart type. And then 10 minutes later, someone said, could this station please get this massive Trump supporter off the station? So somehow within a period of about 600 to 800 seconds, I was crazy left wing guy. And then I'm the one hanging out with Donald Trump. And you know what? I love that. I love the fact that, I just don't like predictable. Like, you see this all the time in Twitter. You know the people in media, and they're all, you know exactly what they're going to say. You know, Don Cherry would say something, and it was always predictable. Oh, all these Twitter people are going to say this. All these Twitter people are going to say that. There is a fight. There is a coach being dismissive of analytics. And he knew what everyone was going to do. And I always hate that, because it just, I don't like predictable. Earlier in the show, I was kind of saying to players out there, suck it up when you get booed. Julius Randle, yeah, you might hate it, but don't go after the fans. You're going to lose. It's a big mistake. So in that case, I'm being anti-player. Or I could get painted as anti-player. Oh, you're anti-player. Well, you must be pro-owner. I bet you're right wing. And then, you know, all goes like that. But on the other side, there's one thing I feel bad for Antonio Brown. And I'll explain. But I want to first play this clip. Give me the we'll get some prop bets in 1 second. But give me the Bruce Arians, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was asked to address all these things, all these accusations from Antonio Brown. And Brown saying, yeah, I was hurt. They knew I was hurt. I couldn't play. They shot me up with stuff. I said, coach, I can't play. And coach said, get out of here. Well, here's the coach with his response.
We let Antonio go today just to clear you up on some things that happened. At no point in time during that game did he ever ask a trainer or a doctor about his ankle. He never went through, that's the normal protocol. You go through protocols during games. I was never notified of it. So obviously that was the disturbing thing when we were looking for him to go back into the game. All right. He was very upset at halftime about who was getting targeted. Got that calmed down. Players took care of that. It started again on the sideline. We called for the personnel group that he had played in the entire game. He refused to go in the game. That's when I looked back and saw him basically wave off the coach. I then went back, approached him about what was going on. I ain't playing. What's going on? I ain't getting the ball. That's when I said, you're done. Get the F out of here. That's the end of it. We're working on Carolina. That's the end of the story. Hopefully it ends today.
And my thought is, I mean, we could do he said, she said all day. But the one thing I feel bad for, the one group I feel bad for, is the diva wide receiver. Because we always ask yourself, why is it always the receivers complaining the most? Why is it always them jumping up and down? Why is it them, needing the most attention? It's because if the ball isn't thrown their way, they don't get their receiving yards and their targets and their receptions and their touchdowns. And you know what happens to them then? They lose out on lots of money. Every NFL contract is filled with incentives all over the place. So I do understand that. And the receiver, and Tom Brady talked about it, the receiver is the one the farthest away from the ball. So I do have sympathy for receiver when they're upset, because part of it is their livelihood, their ability for their next contract to attract other interests from other teams. Now, of course, you don't want to do it to the detriment of winning and losing the way Antonio Brown does, but I do have sympathy for the quote-unquote diva receiver out there. They need those targets. They need those catches. And that's what it goes into what I wanted to talk about, player prop bets. This is a very difficult weekend, I think, to make money, just because there's a lot of uncertainty on the final week. You don't know who's playing. You don't know all about the motivations. But I want to throw in a couple bets, and I'll get your thoughts on it. Are you ready, Austin?
Born ready, Matt. Let's hear it.
Russell Wilson, he gets a $250,000 bonus with a completion percentage of 66%. He's got a completion percentage of 65.2%. So he's close. So I'm going to take the over for completions for Russell Wilson, Seattle taking on Arizona.
Yeah, I love that. Give him a lot of high percentage short yardage stuff. Maybe get that up. Yep. But Pete Carroll might not like him, so it might just be a lot of long bombs. We'll see.
There you go. There you
go. I do like that one. That's a really good one.
Yeah. AJ Green, he will get, let's see, he's got 825 yards. If he gets 900, he gets a quarter of a million bonus. So if he gets 75 yards, he gets 250,000. If he catches 10 passes, he gets another 250,000. Now I don't know if he's going to get 10 balls in that game, but I do like the over for receptions and yards for AJ Green.
Oh, that's a really interesting one, because if he had kept his early season form up, he would have hit those already, but he's really hasn't been the same AJ Green since about week 12, just looking at him statistically.
Yeah.
But if he can just get it together for that last week, it is a big game for Arizona too. They do have to win. There's no reason to rest anybody. I'm with you on that one too. I like that. Hope AJ Green gets paid today.
Stephon Diggs has 94 catches. If he hits 100, that bumps up his base salary for the next 3 years. Take the over for his receptions. Chris Jones, I mentioned this the other day, defensive lineman for the Chiefs. Take the over of 0.5 sacks. If he gets one more sack, he gets a bonus of $1.25 million. Marcus Golden for the Arizona Cardinals has 11 sacks. If he gets 13, he gets $1 million. And by the way, obviously I'm not saying these are all going to play out, but if you want to go to me what a safer investment is, look at places like this. Preston Smith for the Packers. Of course, make sure he's playing or not. But if he gets one more, he's got 9 sacks on the year for Green Bay. He gets one more sack, he gets $750,000. So look for most of these, the sacks, it's 0.5. So all you got to do is get one. So, you know, the Preston Smith I love, the Chris Jones I love. All they need is one sack. This, to me, is where you make your money.
Oh, yeah, that is exactly the way to do it, is you have to, it takes research, but the incentive-based gambling is always where we bet on the games to win money, these players play the games to earn money, they're going to go out there and try to get all the money they can, so I think that is a brilliant way of handicapping this week.
And finally, if he plays, because he's got a hamstring, but Kyle Pitts is 59 receiving yards away from setting the single-season rookie tight end record, which, by the way, goes back to 1961. Mike Ditka holds that record. Bet you didn't know that. Atlanta's got nothing to play for. Let's get the kid that record. So that's my final one.
I like that a lot. That's a great one. And then on that line of thinking, Matt, and I was debating this one, do you think the Bengals tried to get Ja'Marr Chase either the rookie record or the franchise receiving record? Franchise receiving record, 67 yards. Rookie record is 115. Do you think we see any of Ja'Marr Chase?
No. Yeah, if Joe Burrow ain't there, then Ja'Marr Chase isn't there as well. On the other side, Raptors beat reporter for Sports Illustrated, Aaron Rose, is going to join us. Who the hell's playing tonight, and how afraid are American teams of crossing the border? That's coming up next on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. If you are looking at playing some prop bets in tonight's Raptors game against the Utah Jazz, maybe be afraid of point totals. The Raptors could get out to a big lead considering they have everyone. Utah's got nobody in the lineup, so be wary of taking the over for points. But I won both of these in the last game. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to take over for total assists for Pascal Siakam. That number's at 4.5. And Scotty Barnes, that number is 3.5. and it's plus 119 for Scotty Barnes. It's minus 126 for Siakam, but I like the over for assists for both those gentlemen. Join me now to talk all things Raptors, covers the team for Sports Illustrated. It is Aaron Rose. Aaron, thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you for having me on. Maybe take the over on DJ Wilson minutes tonight. It might get ugly in a hurry. I don't know if they have a line for that.
They don't. The one I'm looking at right now, anyone out there that has a book that'll get you DJ Wilson player props, you've got a deep book. I'm just gonna say that. I can say that right now. I want to start with this question, and I've been reading some preview things about the game tonight, and some of the inferences that the writers or reporters are making is that some of the players not playing tonight for Utah, it's not because of injury, it's not because they have COVID. It's just they're afraid of the protocols here in Canada. And I'm wondering if you've heard anything about that.
I haven't heard anything about that tonight. I know that came up when the Warriors were in town. There was reports that they didn't bring their guys, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, and I think Otto Porter. And one of the reasons was they didn't want to deal with things going on at the border and guys potentially testing positive. We know that Andrew Wiggins ended up going into protocols after that, and maybe it's more complicated if you're here and you test positive and then you can't get across the border. So maybe that's an issue. Steve Kerr didn't really want to comment on that. He said it was one of many reasons. We also know they were playing on a back-to-back, so those guys probably wouldn't have played anyways. They just rested them. So I'm not sure we've seen a team say, we were otherwise going to play these guys and decided, you know, let's not come to Canada because of the situation. I don't think we've had that point yet, but it's certainly interesting that it came up with the Warriors a little bit. I also know that we had Tyronn Lue tested positive when he was here, the Clippers head coach. And my understanding is that he somehow flew back to the States. And we know OG Anunoby was flown after he went into protocols. And I think we know he tested positive. He was flown from Chicago to Toronto via some private jet. I think it was like an ambulance jet. So I know like most people can't cross the border with COVID. I think there may be some exceptions made for people like NBA players, for example.
Yeah, because to me, I find this one really interesting because we could, if any of this is true, and, you know, listen, this is the NBA. It's a history of resting players, even players that are healthy. And if it's between one game or the other, it's like, you don't have to make the flight to Canada. Who knows what happens at Pearson? If any of this is even remotely true, Aaron, we could be looking at the greatest home court advantage in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, if only fans could go to games. But you're absolutely right. We know Kyrie Irving, barring him getting vaccinated later on the season, the Nets, I think, are scheduled to play a game here in a couple months, and he won't be allowed to play because he's unvaccinated and not allowed into the country. So that's a concrete example of a time, you know, at a later date where the government will say you're not allowed to come to Canada, and therefore the Raptors have a huge home court advantage. Again, I'm not sure we've seen a situation where somebody has not come to Canada, with the exception of those Warriors guys who, as I mentioned, were going to rest. But if that ever does happen, and we've seen the Raptors get lucky a couple times where guys aren't playing, whether it was Giannis a little while ago, that could be a huge advantage for the Raptors.
Who the hell is playing tonight for the Utah Jazz?
Everyone, all their good players basically are out of the lineup. That's probably the easiest way to do it. I'm not sure I could tell you their whole roster who is playing. Gobert is out. Donovan Mitchell is out. Joe Ingles is out. Bogdanovich is out. I think you said Clarkson's out. It's a bit of a mess, and the Raptors have taken advantage of a lot of teams recently. Their last five wins have all come against teams who have been missing their best player. Now, we know the Raptors went through a two-game stretch. They were a little lucky that some of their games were postponed, but that's life in the NBA right now, where every single night it seems like some superstar is out of the lineup, and you can only play the team that's standing across from you on the court. And right now the Raptors are getting a little lucky, and all the teams they're playing are missing their best guys.
How difficult is it? We're talking about Aaron Rose, who covers the Raptors for Sports Illustrated. How difficult is it? And I, you know, do this through the lens of assessing who the Raptors are, but you know, you can do this with so many regular season games for so many teams. How hard is it to get a gauge on just who the hell's good, who the hell's bad, and what should be the proper pecking order in the NBA?
Well, I've been dying to do that for the Raptors. We've seen them. I think everyone's really excited about what they've shown over the last couple of games. I think they're on a four-game winning streak now. But they haven't really beaten, they've beaten some big name teams and some very good teams, but they've all, as I mentioned, been missing their best players. So I can't get a read on who this team is. The Raptors, I think, are 11 point favorites tonight against Utah. Utah is one of the best teams in the league, and they're going to club them because Utah's without all their best players. I'm hoping that the Suns aren't missing anyone when the Raptors play them in a couple nights, and maybe we can get a read for who this team is. But I was really looking forward to seeing how the Raptors compared to a great Jazz team with a great offense and then a prolific center, and how the Raptors were going to stop a team like that. Unfortunately, none of those guys are playing. So I have no idea how to get a read on just how good this Raptors team is. So I think that might be the way it goes for a little while until COVID's behind them. And then hopefully we can see what this healthy Raptors team looks like against other talented, healthy teams.
Yeah, and it, like the thing is I think our expectations, and we've talked about this plenty of times, like what they were before the start of the season, and then we saw the growth of Scottie Barnes, but then, you know, injuries and COVID, and now everyone coming back, Fred VanVleet shooting like he's, you know, he's, I'm not going to say the next Steph Curry, there is no next Steph Curry, but he's second in three-pointers made, and I want to know, and you're right about that Suns game, I just want to know what is a realistic high-end ceiling for this team, not a crazy, you know, I'm making it, my expectations have gone through the roof, but what are realistic high expectations for this team?
I would say that they're not going to be as good as the Nets, assuming they're fully healthy, or the Bucks, or the 76ers, yeah. Especially if they make a trade and they get something back for Ben Simmons. And there's a couple teams, probably that top tier, throw the Miami Heat in there, but we've seen the Celtics are struggling still. The Hawks are struggling still. And they're probably in that tier, in that mix with a lot of teams in the East. That seems to go from sort of number six in the Eastern Conference all the way to like 11th in the Eastern Conference. They're not as bad as Detroit or Orlando. But if they lose a couple games or something happens and guys get injured, they could slip down to 11th. Or if they keep playing well and maybe they keep getting lucky with guys being out of the lineup on other teams, or as you mentioned, maybe something happens and people don't want to come to Canada anymore, well, they could go up to sort of that sixth seed area, and they'll be on the road, and it'll be a tough first-round playoff series, and they might get Kyle Lowry in the first round, which would be a lot of fun. But that's probably your high-end expectations, is something like that in a really fun, I'm sure very gritty series against probably Miami, which would be probably a bloodbath on the court and something that maybe represents hockey with those two teams.
Oh, I'd love that. Also, though, I'd be torn. Imagine the Raptors where they made it out of the first round of the playoffs, and they faced Miami and Chicago, and it was Lowry and DeRozan. Emotionally, that would be very difficult.
Very difficult. And with everything that DeMar is doing right now is really spectacular. And I think Raptors fans are sort of so happy to see him finally getting some, you know, MVP recognition, because he's really taken his game to a next level. But you're certainly right that that would be very weird, mixed emotions seeing those guys. At least you'd be happy that even if the Raptors lost, you get to see those guys go on and maybe take a shot at another championship.
I know I'm not supposed to get angry about this, but bleep it. On a scale of 1 to 10 on the radio meter, how upset should I be that right now Kyrie Irving and Tyler Hero and Derrick Rose have more votes than Fred VanVleet for all-star position at guard?
If that's how you want to spend your time these days with everything that's going on, if that's what, if
that's
your
it. Yes.
Life is so
yes.
great that that's what's going to yes. make you upset, go for it.
That's right. That's right, Aaron. Right. Am I worried about income inequality or just the state of small business or COVID or mistrust with the government or our mistrust we have with the media, the leaking sense of empathy that is leaving us in humanity, global warming? Should I be mad at that, or should I be mad that what the hell is Tyler Hero doing getting more votes than Fred VanVleet?
Kyrie Irving is the craziest one. I think those came out the day after he played his first game of the season. Maybe it's a bunch of anti-vax people who are standing up for their guy. If you choose to believe such things, I don't. But it's absolutely ridiculous. Fortunately, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. Though only those top two guys, that's only for the starters. And I can't imagine the coaches are going to put Kyrie in over Fred VanVleet. I certainly think he deserves to be an all-star game reserve. And I think that will play out. Those things don't concern me too much, but if you have the time for it, go for it.
That's right. Absolutely. That's how perfect my life is. This right now, my number one concern. Aaron, Always appreciate. Follow the man on Twitter at Aaron Ben Rose. Covers the Raptors for Sports Illustrated. All the best. Take care and enjoy. I mean, I know. Enjoy the game. This feels like when the Raptors played Cleveland and they had nobody, and now it's turnaround. But enjoy the game, and hopefully Raptors versus Phoenix will give us a better idea of just who this team is.
Thank you very much, and good luck on your bets tonight.
Thank you, thank you. I'm going to take the over for assists for Barnes and Siakam. All right, on the other side, speaking of bets, sportsinformationtraders.com, their CEO, John Price, will join us. We will look at Bills-Jets. That's coming up in a second right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. I should tell everyone that there has been an issue with my computer where I can't read your texts. And we're going to try to get a system where my producer forwards or sends them over to me. And I just want to let you know, because I always love reading all the texts that are sent in. The ones that agree with me, the ones that disagree with me, and everything in between. So if you're wondering, you've been shooting in texts, and you have, I mean, it's not like I can, you know, I can get to every one of them, but I try to get to as many as possible. And I just haven't been able to do that. But hopefully by Monday, we have that cleared. You can always tweet me at mcause56. But a lot of you are smarter than me, and you don't have a Twitter account, which I think is the proper way of doing it. Leafs taking on Colorado tomorrow. There will be no Mitch Marner in the lineup. Both him and Pierre Engvall have entered into the NHL's COVID-19 protocols. Joey Anderson, one of the players who has been assigned to the Leafs taxi squad. And as far as I can see, Nick Ritchie has cleared all waivers, so maybe he'll be in the lineup tomorrow as the Leafs take on Nazem Kadri and his 42 points in 27 games.
42 points. Colorado. My goodness.
42 points. Yeah. He like McKinnon
is 30. I had to double
30...
check because I saw that.
Yes. I did the same thing. I remember starting to really think about this game yesterday. I'm like, oh, okay, let me just, I know obviously we have McKinnon and oh my God, that goal by Cale Makar and there's Ratanen, there's Landeskog. And I knew Kadri was playing well, but I just, yeah, my bad, my bad. I didn't realize he's on a 127-point pace. He's got 42 points in 27 games. That number is absolutely ridiculous. Joining me now, does every Friday on the show, CEO of SportsInformationTraders.com, it is John Price. John, as always, I know it's the 7th. I can't wish you a happy new year. It's too late. So I'll just say good afternoon, my friend. I hope you're doing well.
Listen, there are people that still have their Christmas lights up a week later, so you can wish me Happy New Year, probably up to the Super Bowl, I would think.
Okay. All right. That's
nice. I love this time of year. This is what I call the intersection this is what I call the intersection of greatness, because this week alone, we're going to see a baton passed. The Monday night championship game between Alabama and Georgia is going to be the final chapter of the college football season. The NFL games that you see this weekend is going to be the final chapter of the regular season, and then immediately we go right into the playoffs. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a brand new year. We have a lot of people who jumped on board this year from Toronto at different levels, different times of the year, that have had great success with us. We've also had a lot of people who called in, inquired, said maybe next year, and we're here for you. We're here to show you that whatever mistakes you made betting in 2021, you can make it up and you can get yourself in the right direction in 2022. This is what we're doing this weekend. I've got 5 plays, 3 NFL plays and 2 college plays. 3 NFL plays over this weekend and then a side and total on Monday night's national championship college football game. And I know that in Toronto, NFL and CFL is levels above in terms of interest where college football is concerned. But I would tell you this. I know you love your football in Toronto, and if you want to see what's going to be the best game of the college football season, you will have your TV on Monday night. 5 plays for you this week.
$129 is the amount. You can buy it at our website, sportsinformationtraders.com. Again, it's sportsinformationtraders.com. You must be a new client, which means you're not currently with us. And very important, you must have a place to wager. We don't place bets for anybody. We only get you on the plays, the lines, and the amounts to play based on what you already bet. So let us help you this weekend. Five plays, $129. I call it the Championship Week 5 play. You can purchase it right now at sportsinformationtraders.com.
And also for people out there that love the NFL but maybe don't watch a lot of college football, should be reminded that that the game on Monday, there's going to be a lot of players playing on Monday that will be drafted that will be playing on Sunday as well. So definitely check it out. 866-441-2711 is the phone number. Sportsinformationtraders.com. $129 weekend package is John's best game, so a total of five plays. John, in terms of the NFL, woo, this is a big line. The Bills are a 16.5 point favorite against a Jets team that probably should have beat Tampa last week. I'm curious your thoughts on the final Bills game of the regular season.
Well, we're 10-4 in radio plays here in Toronto this year, yep. And most of them have been NFL plays, and a lot of them have been around the Buffalo Bills. That's why I selected to go with this game, because I know that for people that are playing our games free on the radio, they've made money with us, and why not keep it going? How about that? So the line opened with the Bills at -17. It's now at 16.5, so slight edge in public money on the Jets. Bills are coming off a win over Atlanta. They've won three in a row, chance to wrap up the AFC East with a win over the Jets. I expect Josh Allen, that offense, to play very, very well and dominating. At the same time, they got to be very careful because the Bills are in the playoffs, and they know it already. And the AFC is stacked with teams all that could make a run. So the goal here for Buffalo is to get ahead, make sure this game is secure, and get the starters out of the game. The Jets coming off a tough loss to the Buccaneers. They led late. We heard it. We saw it. Antonio Brown, the whole thing, up by two touchdowns, let the game slip away. When you look at the Jets on paper, you feel sad for them. But if you watch the Jets on tape, you see that they're competitive. This is a team that is going to show up this week believing that they have every chance to win that football game. Now, in terms of wagering, the point spread is way too big for me to find any value here. And I know that the point total is low because of the weather. I mean, right now it's snowing in one-third of America as well. So I know the point total is low, but 40.5 is the total. And I think the Jets have proved they can move the ball in a lot of defenses. The Bills know they need to score to secure this game. And so I'm going to take the over 40.5 points in the Bills-Jets football game. This is obviously not one of the plays that our clients will be on this weekend. But again, I can't emphasize enough, this is our fourth or fifth year on in Toronto, and yeah, I've talked to some people who are now clients in Toronto, and I know that the knowledge of football in Toronto is very, very strong, and now you can bet on single-game wagers like you couldn't a couple years ago. So, listen, I'm not going to tell you that in these next five games you're going to make up for all the losses that you had in 2021, but what I can tell you is that these five plays are going to show you how to make a profit before Tuesday of next week. It's only $129. It's five plays. There's NFL tomorrow and Sunday, so three plays this weekend. The side and total of Monday night's college football national championship. It doesn't matter if you bet $1,000 a game, $5,000 a game, $500 a game. It's $129, so we can show you why we're the best in the industry. You can buy it now at sportsinformationtraders.com, or if you remember our phone number, 866-441-2711. When we talk next week, the college football season will be closed and the NFL playoffs will be off and running. I can't wait.
Oh, I know. It's just an orgy of NFL playoff games on Saturday and Sunday as cardio gets put to the side. John, always appreciate it. Again, sportsinformationtraders.com, 866-441-2711. All the best, John. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Again, John Price from sportsinformationtraders.com. We got one more week of my confidence picks, and I'm doing my best, just drinking some water, getting ready to yell and scream about it. Before I do that, before I go to break, Austin, do you like? Is there any picks that you love? Is there any games that you've really circled that's really got your interest?
No, Matt. Actually, I was so hot last week. I was 13-3 in my pool. I've been doing really well, but I'm gonna keep the same thing. I didn't look at it last week till Saturday. I'm not gonna look at it again. I have a question for you though. Are you more confident in your picks or your physical ability to do all 16 games? Where does your confidence lay?
More in my physical ability to do it. I like that. Like, this is just
You don't like it this week, eh? It's squirrely.
Which is weird. It's a squirrely week.
It's a squirrely week.
It's a squirrely. And the thing is that this is going to be done at Friday at 3 p.m. You know, like for instance, it was just a day or so ago. I was debating taking Denver. You know, they're at home. It's like 11 and a half. Is it? It's really 11 and a half. But then, you know, you hear about all these injuries in the secondary for the Broncos. I'm like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm now leaning, but I'll save it for the next segment, to the Kansas City Chiefs. But it's just, it's COVID, like no Micah Parsons. It's, I'm going to rest a guy, but it's also, there could be scoreboard watching where team A needs team B to win. But team B is down by 20, so team A is like, screw it, let's get all the starters off the field.
Yeah, from what I saw earlier in the week, the only two I have very strong feelings about is I loved the Lions. I saw them, I think, at +4 earlier in the week. Anywhere near there, I like them. I think they can win that game outright. They're absolutely ATS kings this year. And then I also like the football team over the Giants because I think the Giants are completely capitulated. This is nothing to do with you, I swear. I think they've quit on Joe Judge. I don't think they want him there anymore. Mike Glennon, Jake Fromm, it doesn't really matter. I think the football team can cover that game by 7 points easily.
Spoiler alert, we're in agreement. The only thing I'll say about the Lions is they're one of my two kryptonite teams. I get them wrong every week. Every bleeping week. So we will, I almost swore there. We'll save that. The Chargers and the Lions. Those are the two teams. And yet I might like the Chargers at +3,500, 3,800 to win the Super Bowl. Because again, we all do really super duper dumb things. All right. That's coming up on the other side. We will get to all of my picks. And that is coming up in just a moment. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. But before any of that, let's hit the roads. Time now for News Talk 1010 Traffic Update.